Does your child suffer from migraines? Seeing them deal with the pain and symptoms, how it can interrupt their school and activities, can be heart-wrenching. That's why Biohaven is conducting a new clinical trial to learn how a medicine that's already helping adults with migraine might help your child too. If your child is between the ages of 12 and 17 and has at least a six-month history of migraine, they may qualify. To find out more, visit childmigraine.com.
Hello, I'm Heather Barnes, food and product photographer and storyteller behind the lens. Our Austin-based team is all about visual solutions. For your brand, it's essential for your product to be memorable and have stickiness. Our clients like Ghirardelli, Tiff's Treats, and Natamu choose our photography to develop positive associations with their brand. They call our work inspiring because it moves consumers into a relationship with their company. And we can do the same for you. Learn more today at heatherbarnes.com, focused on you, your story, and your success with memorable photography garnished with love.
Hey, and welcome back to Success Made to Last Author's Corner. I'm Rick Tokini. This program is brought to you by Heather Barnes Photography, Game Day Media, as well as Edward Jones Financial Advisors, and thanks to all those great sponsors of this show. Hey, on today's show is author David Murray, advertised as eminently more interesting than Dane Dunstan, which I'd love. Dane was a former guest on this show, and we love Dane and all of his work. David heads the Global Professional Speech Writers Association, so we're talking to ecosystem people today, and he comments daily on communication issues on his popular blog, Writing Boots. We're going to be talking to him today about his latest book, Effort to Understand. David, welcome to Author's Corner.
It is so good to be here, Rick. It's great to be here, and we'll let the audience be the judge of my relative interestingness versus Dane Dunstan's.
The ratings will tell us which one of you has the best. Okay, so tell us the rest of your story.
Yeah, well, I grew up in a little town called Hudson, Ohio, the son of two writers, two very different writers. My mother was – they met in an advertising agency where they were sort of in the Mad Men era in an advertising agency, actually in Detroit in the 60s. And it was kind of a relationship like you – saw in Mad Men. That's how they met, and then. But she was really a novelist at heart, and he was an advertising person. So I kind of grew up with these two writers and these two very different human beings, it kind of forced me. Well, my lack of imagination forced me to become a writer, but being of those two, I think it kind of forced me to find my own voice, because she was really one kind of writer, and he was really and truly another, and I think I found a voice that's kind of a third voice that relates to them a lot, and they make a lot of appearances in my book. I majored in English at Kent State University in Ohio, and then I moved to Chicago to get a writing job right out of college, and I've been writing here, all kinds of writing, journalism. I've done a lot of some book writing, and I've run this Professional Speechwriters Association in Chicago, and I've been here for 30 years.
Very good. And in your book, Raised by Mad Men, did you have any references to Darren Stevens on Bewitched and the famous pitching with three different ideas in case one gets rejected?
I did not. But I did grow up in the world. I was kind of my father's best friend, even when I was 6 or 7 or 8 years old. So I got a lot of advertising lore at a very young age. And his great story about pitching advertising was that he said that if you were pitching you had a campaign and you're pitching a client and it just knew it wasn't very strong. He said that the trick at the last minute was to just blow the ad up to what they would call "Oh my God" size. So the ad wasn't very good, but if it was big enough, the client would say, "Oh my God!" You'd kind of get away with it.
I love that. Okay, we talk about gratitude a lot on this show. I would love for you to take a few minutes to thank your mentors that you've had in your life.
Okay. Well, I thank my parents all the time. I talk a lot about how, you know, it's kind of sad and amazing how fast when people die, they're both gone. They've been gone a long time. When people die, they disappear. You know, they just disappear from the planet after a generation or two. And those people have nothing to complain about with me because I talk about them and write about them all the time. I'm 53 years old, and you know, their words and their ideas are a true North touch point for me, and they're all through my writing. So they got no reason to complain. And then Studs Terkel is my other mentor. And I met Studs pretty late in his life. He was a mentor to me before I ever met him. In fact, today is the 110th anniversary of Studs Terkel's birth. He was born today in 1912. And as Studs used to say, 1912, the Titanic went down and I came up. So Studs wrote this book, Working. And this book, Working, was truly a foundational thing for me. I mean, it was a radical idea. It was, I'm going to interview regular people, and I'm going to interview them at length and let them talk for pages and pages. And I'm going to edit them some, but basically their wisdom is going to form a book that people are going to sit down and read. And they're going to listen to nurses talk about being nurses, and advertising people talk about being advertising people, and jackhammer operators. And he did this with a series of books on a series of subjects, but Working was the first one I saw. And I think it deeply affected me, and I think it led to books like this new one, An Effort to Understand, because I think it convinced me that every human being not just has a story to tell, but has a point of view that if it's gotten to carefully and gently. Studs talked about asking the gentlest question, which is, and then what happened? You know, you can really get some beauty and some wisdom out of every single human being. And not just some, but a whole world of it. And Studs taught me that, and I'm grateful, very, very grateful for that.
Oh, thank you for saying that. What a great tribute. And it's a wonderful segue into what my parents drilled into me, which was the 2-to-1 ratio. Ricky, you have 2 ears and 1 mouth. Make sure to use it in that ratio. So tell us about the importance of listening and teach me about listening.
Yeah, I mean, I think, thank you for that. I think that we think of listening as often as just taking in the words that the other person is saying. And usually we can argue against them, we can dismiss them, we can say, oh, well, that's disingenuous. But if you take listening in a little bit of a deeper context, I've been talking lately about imaginative listening, so that you're not just listening for the logical limitations of someone's words, you're kind of listening between the lines of those words. And I've got, if you don't mind, I'd love to read a paragraph in my book where I describe that better in writing than I'm going to in an interview. Is that okay?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. Communication requires listening as much as speaking. It requires deep listening and constant listening. It requires careful listening, imaginative listening, and repeated listening. And in our own time, if we are going to have a society that is worth living in, we must truly learn to truly listen, to hear. We must sense with the tiniest cilia of our ears and the tenderest membranes of our hearts, not just the words of our friends and family, our co-workers and leaders, but the deepest intent of those words and their emotional source. We must listen with the assumption, so hard to sustain in the daily madness of American life, that the other person came by his or her views as honestly, or maybe as dishonestly, as we came to ours. And we must listen with the belief that with an effort, we can understand.
That is powerful. And that also hurts at the same time.
Yeah, it hurts because we fail at it all the time.
Constantly. And here we are doing a podcast, and I'm trying to listen deeply to what you're saying, writing it down as fast and furiously as possible, because how am I supposed to respond unless I'm really trying to listen in between the lines? So it is a skill that I'm constantly working on. What tips can you give to crazy people like me and others that listen to this show?
Well, I think one of the tips that I give is you know, keeping trying is a big part of it. I mean, there's a moment in the book. This is a moment my dad probably doesn't appreciate my quoting of him, but my dad had a girl. My mother died long before he died, and he had a girlfriend. And when he was about 80 years old, and they didn't get along very well, okay? But they couldn't quit each other. And I remember hearing at least once, but maybe multiple times, they lived in separate bedrooms. And I remember him going up to her bedroom door after another day of fighting and whatever. And I remember him whispering gently, "We'll try her again tomorrow, Betty." And I really think that, you know, a lot of us have given up. A lot of us are spending a lot of time shaking our heads at the other side politically, or at the other side in our family, having contempt for people, dismissing people, and having that be the last straw. And I think we have to be more responsible than that. And I think we have to say, okay, it didn't work out. We had a huge fight at Thanksgiving last year. Let's try her again tomorrow. Let's all try it again. And let's try to understand each other better. I mean, one of the things, you know, I have ended up on this book tour talking a lot to, I'm basically a liberal, but I've ended up lecturing liberals mostly because they're my audience, but mostly because that's who needs to hear this in my world, in the world that I reside in. And it's like, so let's just take an extreme example, and I don't know how much you want to get into politics on this show, but take the most extreme example of the insurrection in Washington. People are storming the Capitol building and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And the reaction to that on most people's part is, I will never understand that. That's ridiculous behavior. How could they, you know, how could anybody get that crazy that a thing like that would happen? And to me, I can see that very clearly if you just try to think about times in your life where you've been caught up in a movement. You've been – something seems really important, and all of a sudden you've got a society of people surrounding you who also think it's important, and you're somebody in that society, and now you have a community of people, and you're going to do something that really might actually make a difference. That's a really exciting thing, and I've had that in my life. It hasn't been involving storming the Capitol, but it's been fighting City Hall on some issues in Chicago. And I relate emotionally to almost everything I'm seeing in a situation like that. You know, and so I think that's kind of important. You don't have to agree with people politically, but to shake your head and to say, I'll never understand those people in any context, in a totally self-righteous way. And of course now, you know, we're tempted to do that with Russia, and we're always tempted to do that. But as soon as you dismiss other human beings as less than human and completely different from you in a way that you can't relate. Well, then once you do that, that's how wars start. The only thing to do after that is to bomb people. And so I just think as citizens of a country, as patriotic citizens of a country and citizens of not just of the country, but of our towns, of our school districts, we have to, each of us, have a responsibility to try to understand other people as well as we possibly can and to demonstrate that. And I've made a lot of, honestly, personal progress in my own life. This is not a lecture I would have been giving 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. And I think I've made a lot of progress with a lot of people in my life who I would have pretty much had major cold wars with, that I have good relationships now because I think I've demonstrated that I really believe this stuff.
I really appreciate you saying that, because it is the author coming forth saying, I'm still working on it and you can work on it too.
Yeah. I'm definitely still working on it. Ask anybody who lives with me. I mean, this is not, you know, this is, I am not a priest, and no, you know, none of us are, but I do think that I do think that, you know, we have to take more responsibility than we had to take 10 or 15 or 20 years ago. I have a section in my book where I talk about being a bomb thrower. I used to love to just cause huge fights as a writer. Writers do that. That's one of the things writers do, and great writers. It's a great tradition. H.L. Mencken did that. Hunter S. Thompson did that. Causing a fight creates a conversation. It's a function of being a writer. I just don't think it's the right essential function for me at this stage. And I think as citizens, when we all have platforms, we're all writers now, we're all on Facebook, and we either create fights all the time, we alienate people, we say terribly dismissive things on Facebook, and we drive people into corners. And I think each of us needs to feel as really responsible to not do that if there's any way to avoid it.
Yeah, it's a good point. On the other hand, talking politics for less than 90 seconds on this point that you've made, wouldn't it be grand if our country could evolve into seeking first to understand each other and then be understood, and really break this division up, because we were able to talk across the aisle from one another and have some mutual respect for each other as Americans, but also say, I understand your position and all the reasons why. Here is my position.
Yes.
But don't go shooting each other over that.
Yes. Can I read? There's another section of this book that I think it goes to this point. I don't know how you're doing on time. This is the opening lines of my book, and it's the source of the title of my book. It's about a minute and a half, but I think it underlines this point. Do they know about Martin Luther King? You can hear Senator Robert F. Kennedy ask someone this as he stands on the back of a flatbed truck in the early spring dark on a street corner in a park in an all-black neighborhood in North Indianapolis. You can just make out the answer of a white official.
Does your child suffer from migraines? Seeing them deal with the pain and symptoms, how it can interrupt their school and activities, can be heart-wrenching. That's why Biohaven is conducting a new clinical trial to learn how a medicine that's already helping adults with migraine might help your child too. If your child is between the ages of 12 and 17 and has at least a 6-month history of migraine, they may qualify. To find out more, visit childmigraine.com.
We have left it up to you. Kennedy hesitates for exactly 2 seconds and then makes a request that must have come to members of the ebullient crowd as the first signal that this was not going to be the typical campaign rally. Could you lower those signs, please? Another 2 seconds. I have some very sad news for all of you, and that is that Martin Luther King was shot and was killed tonight in Memphis, Tennessee. The whole crowd screams at once, then grows quiet just as quickly, which might have surprised Kennedy. He waits 9 seconds before beginning again. Martin Luther King dedicated his life to love and to justice between fellow human beings. He died in the cause of that effort. In this difficult day, in this difficult time for the United States, it is perhaps well to ask what kind of a nation we are and what direction we want to move in. That was April 4th, 1968, about a year before I was born. Hundreds of times I've listened to the speech that Kennedy went on to deliver that night. I've shown it to audiences of writers all over the United States and all over the world. Every time I've shown it, it has meant something more to me. And every year, it seems to me less a relic of America's past and a haunting prediction of America's future. The speech is only 5 minutes long and 543 words. When you hear a speech that short that many times over a period of time, different words begin to get under your skin and start to itch. We can move in that direction as a country, and greater polarization, black people amongst blacks, white amongst whites, filled with hatred toward one another. Or we can make an effort, as Martin Luther King did, to understand and to comprehend and to replace that violence, that stain of bloodshed that is spread across our land, with an effort to understand, compassion, and love. And to me, Rick, that that the reason that started to finally resonate, it's such a bland sounding phrase, an effort to understand, and why does he keep repeating it? And it's like, I finally got it. He's saying in this country, we really need to make an effort to understand. In this country particularly, this country is a collection of people from all corners of the earth. This country is a collection of desperate people who came here desperate for a new life. And they came with 100 million different attitudes. This country had slavery in its past, for God's sakes. Try to make an effort to understand what it was like to be enslaved for 300 years as a society. I mean, and he's begging Americans. He's saying we have to make this effort. And I just wonder if we are cognizant of that at this moment, or we feel like the best thing to do is to be, you know, as truculent as possible. It's almost like a self-righteous purity with which we shake our heads and say, I'll never understand those other people on the other side. And I think it truly misses the point of not only modern life, but of the whole idea of America in the first place.
Me too. And hell no, that's not where we are. We're at 1968 and maybe 1958 or maybe 1948.
Yeah.
I think we're getting farther and farther away from that effort to understand each other. That speech is emblematic of what we say, what we don't, and why it matters.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
All right, let's go to a commercial. But tell our listeners where they can purchase your book and maybe even get a signed autographed copy.
Don't know about the signed autograph copy. If you want to get a signed autograph copy, write to me, and we'll figure that out directly. And I'm at Writing Boots, WRITING Boots, BOOTS at gmail.com. And you can get the book anywhere books are sold. You can get it at my website, Writing Boots. That's writing-boots.com. Or you can get it wherever books are sold, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere else.
Excellent. We will be right back with author David Murray after this commercial.
Hi, everybody. This is John Largen, founder and CEO of Game Day Media. Our award-winning audio production team has worked with both Amazon and New York Times best-selling authors, CEOs, thought leaders, leaders in education, healthcare, world-class athletes, A-list entertainers, and we'd like to work with you too. Located near the world-famous Riverwalk in downtown San Antonio, Texas, our attention to details and a white-glove approach to our recording process will make your audiobook experience truly memorable. To learn more, go to gamedaymedia.us. That's gamedaymedia.us. You bring your book and your voice, and we'll do the rest. That's gamedaymedia.us.
And we're back with David Murray, and David's book is Effort to Understand. This may be your best ever. How have you grown as an author up to this point of your life?
Well, I do think it has to do with what we were talking about earlier, which is what I've grown as is understanding my best purpose as a writer, what I can truly achieve as a writer. When I got out of college, I think I thought I was probably one of the smartest three or four people in the world. That has really taken a hit over the 30 years of adult life. Wow. So I thought the purpose of a writer was to tell people what to think. I'm a great philosopher. I'm going to tell you what to think. Well, it turned out I was just another kid from Ohio who'd read a few good books. And so then I kind of thought my purpose as a writer was to provoke, to get people excited, to get people mad, to start a fight. I had another mentor who drew on P.T. Barnum's great theory that if you want to draw a crowd, start a fight. And that's what a lot of writers do. And that's what I was really spending a lot of time doing in my 20s and 30s. And then I started realizing, no, you know what I really do better than anybody else is I tell stories and I represent other human beings' point of view. I mean, I can sit with you for a day and then write and talk to you and listen to you about whatever is animating you. And I can represent you to other people and help people understand who you are to the point where you will, even if I show some disagreeable sides of you, you will agree. That's me. I can do that. And to me, that's a great gift. It's my gift. And it doesn't have to do with starting fights and making people mad all the time. And it doesn't have to do with telling other people what to think. And it's valuable. And so I kind of feel like, you know, I'm not trying to heal my nation with this book. This book, An Effort to Understand, is a lot about an effort to understand myself. There's a lot of humor in it. It's a lot about dealing with your family. It's not really all about this political healing. But I do feel that I know what I am as a writer. I know what I'm good at, and I know my purpose here and what my purpose isn't. And it's, you know, it's as a writer, that's a process. It's 30 years of writing full time to come to that place. And that's where I am. It feels like a good spot to be.
You bet it is. You are mentoring to our audience so much just about from a philosophical perspective on writing. So you just killed off a couple of my great questions. So that's good. That means that you and I are in simpatico. So that's all cool. Okay, so we're going to go through a lightning round of questions on the back half of this show. And this is intended for you to answer this in less than 30 seconds. So this is a TED Talk on the to the 10th degree.
Okay.
And you probably hate TED Talks, being a speech writer and an aficionado.
I have a complicated relationship with TED Talks. Let's put it like that.
I bet you do. I bet you do. Okay, so first question, how do you cope with change?
How do I cope with change? I cope with change by trying to – boy – come on, Rick. I cope with change the way everybody copes with change, which is by either, you know, the six stages of grief or whatever, the Kubler-Ross. You deny it, then you fight it, then you accept it. And, you know, you try to figure out how to make the best of it.
Good. So far, so good. That's one down and many to go. Think of a time when someone stood in your way. How did you react?
There have been a few times where somebody stood in my way professionally, and I couldn't believe how I reacted. I reacted like a Wolverine. You don't really understand how much your work matters to you until someone stands in your way, and it's not pretty. It's only been a couple times, but I'm telling you, it's almost physical.
Okay. Thank you. Let's talk about your learning style. How do you absorb information best at this stage of your life? By listening, engaging, or looking?
I think I absorb information best by reading, because when I'm reading, there is no temptation to try to argue back. I actually can sit and take in the information. So I like to read, and I like to listen to books, and I like to do so by myself when I'm at my very best and I'm not trying to win an argument.
Oh, nice. That's nice. Okay. Talking about your book, Effort to Understand, and then relating it to the topic of stickiness. What do you believe that you will always believe?
I think what I believe that I will always believe is that the purpose of life is communication. The purpose of life isn't just communication with your friends and family. It's just communication with everybody, and it's communication with dead people. It's communication with your dead ancestors. It's communication with your future, with the future, people in the future. To me, the purpose of life is getting what's in my head out so that you might see, really see it for what it is, and seeing what's in your head. To me, that's a whole life's purpose, and that never ends.
Nice. The writers that listen to this show all have a common problem, and it is work-life balance, because the majority of them are working at home. Give them some advice on how you balance that work-life ratio.
Carefully. I mean, I run a company. I'm running a company. I'm writing. I find regular times. So I know I'm going to be writing at 7 a.m. And that's before the company starts getting going. I got some people sort of in the Western time zone who come on a little later. So I have this time. I know when I have the quiet time, and I find that time, and there's always writing then. And then I also have some time at the end of the day. So I think I manage it just by knowing how my daily rhythms work, and then I write every day. Writing Boots is a daily blog because I must write every day. I just feel like that's how I keep my knives sharp. And so working it into your daily routine, just like working out, seems really, really crucial.
That's great to hear. And that's very insightful. Your daughter has one of the greatest names in the world. And one of the greatest literature names. When you named her Scout, did that make her a curious person? Or have you just sort of embedded curiosity into that because her name is Scout, or for some other cosmic reason?
This is more than a 30-second answer. It's a 45-second answer. When I named her, we've got a family history. My dad named my sister Piper. He was also a pilot, and he flew a Piper Cub. Okay, so there was a little, and he said he named her after the sandpiper bird, but there was a little controversy there. When I named my daughter Scout, I owned an 1964 International Harvester Scout. Now, she's officially is named after the character in To Kill a Mockingbird, but everybody who knows me knows that there's a double thing. And the beauty of a Scout, aside from the great character in To Kill a Mockingbird, which demands that she be curious, those are big shoes to fill. And I wanted her to have to fill those shoes growing up. But the International Harvester Scout truck is a tough, hard, square, powerful machine that can drive over anything. It's perfectly right. Square and tough. And so that's what I also wanted my daughter to be in this world.
Hmm. That was the greatest 45-second answer in the lightning round we've ever heard. Okay, final question for you is I want you to react to this quote by Elizabeth Edwards. And I want you to spin it into mentoring encouragement for our listening audience. Elizabeth said, she stood in the storm and the wind, and when the wind did not blow her away, she adjusted her sails.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I have a hard time giving advice to young writers and young people in general, because every one of us has to adjust our own sails and has to adjust our sails based on our abilities to do that. I think it has to do with stick-to-itiveness and belief and you're out there on the ocean, and you're going to be out there. You have to figure this out, period. And you have to figure it out the best way you can. And there's no giving up. There's no giving up in the middle of the ocean. And so we're all in that place. And I think it's about just doing it and adjusting them again and adjusting them again Mm-hmm. And being tireless.
You got it. That's David Murray. Now you know him better. Now go buy his book, Effort to Understand, and all of his other books. Raised by Mad Men, the memoir about his advertising parents, and many more. You were as advertised.
No.
Thank you for being on the Author's Corner. What a cool dude. You got to come back. Okay, so we don't do one-offs with people like you. You've got to come back to our show.
Rick, I would love to come back. What a great conversation. And you exemplified Studs Terkel's wonderful, gentle questioning. And I'd come back anytime. Thank you so much for having me.
Wow. To be even mentioned in the same sentence as Studs. What a cool deal. Thank you, man. I've found a new friend and someone who's highly opinionated but has a purpose. I also think that you are a walking, talking Molotov cocktail because it's like, you know, so send over the troops. Great to meet you. Thank you for being on. And as we always end every show, folks, we hope that you continue to move your life from success to significance. Have a great day.
Does your child suffer from migraines? Seeing them deal with the pain and symptoms, how it can interrupt their school and activities, can be heart-wrenching. That's why Biohaven is conducting a new clinical trial to learn how a medicine that's already helping adults with migraine might help your child too. If your child is between the ages of 12 and 17 and has at least a six-month history of migraine, they may qualify. To find out more, visit childmigraine.com.